And we are holding on Lamed Aleph Umud Beis, the ninth line. The line begins Kohi. We left off that we quoted a braisa. We quoted a braisa that mentioned, among other things, what the dinim are about whether you're allowed to use a dry, whether you're allowed to use dalabinim that are dry. The Tanakhama had said no. Rabbi Yehuda had said yes. Rabbi Yehuda brought a proof for that, in fact, from a case, but the Chacham told him that was a shasat chak, so it's no proof. We assumed that Rabbi Yehuda is talking about all dalim minim, and in that case, it would show that even by the esrog, he doesn't care if it's harder or not. But we said that no, not necessarily. He may be referring to the other minim. He may be referring to the lulav and the other minim, whereas the esrog he agrees has to be harder. We discussed the question: would he hold that a harder maybe applies only to the esrog, since it only says harder by it creates harder, and not the others? Or maybe once it says by the esrog, do we apply it to all the others, which is what the Chacham is saying. Okay, so now getting back to other points that we said in the Braise. So Omar, we said Kashem Shein Perchsin Mehen, just like you're not allowed to have any less than the Dalad Minim, you can't have only three of them. Kachen Mesifin Alehem, the same way you can't add anything to them. I'm gonna ask Pshita. Of course you're not allowed to add anything to them. You'd have an Isser of Baal Tosif. The Torah tells you don't add anything to the mitzvahs, this past week's parasha. The answer is Maud Tema. The answer is that the Chiddush is more according to the Yehuda. Hoyov Amr of Yehuda Lulav Tzarech Eger. Now, the Yehuda, we've said before, and we're going to continue, we're going to explain it more times in this Perek. Rabbi Yehuda holds the minim must be bound together, and if they're not, then you're not Yoitze. We discussed in the first Perek why he holds, briefly, why he holds that. We're going to talk about it more in as we go through the Perek. Anyway, he holds that if the minim are not bound together, then you don't have valid Dalad minim. So the imaisi minachrina. So therefore, according to the Yehuda, if you were to bring another min, and you don't bind it together with them, fine. Hai l'chode koi, v'hai l'chode koi. Each one stands by itself. The lulav and the other minim with it stand by themselves. The other thing stands by itself because it's not part of the bundle. So therefore, it wouldn't be considered bal tosif kamash malan. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda wants us to know that nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda would hold that it is an isur of bal tosif. Provided, actually, now that we're going to learn later in the parak that all the dalad minim have to be picked up kederach gedilosa, they all have to be picked up in the direction in which they grow when they're actually on the tree or when they're actually on the plant. So therefore, over here, if you took a fifth min and held it together with them, also right side up, then Rabbi Yehuda would say that you're over on bal tosif. Which, in fact, so Tosfos discusses the point. That really, according to the Chachamim as well, if Ein Sarech Eged, you could also say that the thing stands by itself. The point is more according to Rabbi Yehuda, given that according to Rabbi Yehuda, they have to be bound together. So now when you put another one not in the bundle, then that demonstrates that you're not considering it part of the bundle. So you would think maybe there's no problem with it. But yeah, it does have to be derech gedilason. So if you took something else and then bound it around it in a different direction, for example, let's say we talked about the other day binding the lulav leaves versus other things, then there might not be a problem of baltosif in it, because in any case it's not derech gedilason. Next, we said in the braisa omamar loy motza esrog. We said that if you don't find an esrog, you're not allowed to instead take a pomegranate or a quince or any other kind of fruit. It's interesting, when we quoted the braisa on Amar Aleph, we had it the other way around, first Parish, then Rimon. Here the Gemara is quoting first Rimon, then Parish. Anyway, so the question is, Pshita, obviously, why would we think you're allowed to? The Torah tells you, the Torah tells you creates hodder, and we're going to learn later on Daf Lamed Hey how we know that it is an esrog, but in any case it is, a clear halacha that Amam gives us as an example of a clear halacha that Moshe taught it Baal Peh to the Jewish people, that it has to be an esrog, and nobody ever had any thought that it should be, and nobody among the Chachamim at least ever had any thought that should be anything else. So what would make us think that you could use a pomegranate or what have you? The answer is Maud Tema. Without the Braisa telling us, you would have thought, Lysi, maybe you should take some other min if you don't have the esrog. So you don't forget completely about the whole concept of taking an esrog. So maybe as like a zecher for it, the Chacham would tell you to take something else instead. Kamash Malan, therefore the Braisa tells us no, and there's a reason why not to. Because there could, right, fine, right now you have a zecher for the mitzvah, but on the other hand, there could come out a very bad thing from it. You're going to get used to it. You're going to get used to the idea that you take a pomegranate or what have you, and then even when there is an esrog available, you're going to take that and you're going to forget completely what the proper min is. So therefore, nothing doing in the first place. Don't take anything else as a substitute. The Rosh does bring in a point that what happens if you only have some of the minim and you're completely missing others, so then maybe you should just, if, let's say you only have a lulav and not the other ones, then maybe you should take a lulav without a bracha, fine, but because then at least you're not adding anything else, and since it says in the Torah that you have to take four minim, then we don't have to be so concerned maybe that he's going to forget in the future and think, you know what, it was good enough 1 year, I took just the lulav, therefore obviously that's good enough, because the fact is it does say explicitly in the Torah, whereas the identity of the esrog, it doesn't explicitly say in the Torah. We're going to say later on that we see various hints in the pasuk for it.
So then if that's the case, that it's such a certainty that it's an esrog, why the Torah doesn't state it clearly and straightforwardly?
I think there are some of the Mefoshim actually who explain that Priyetz Hadar is the Torah's name for an esrog. In other words, it has different names, just like there you have certain words that changed in the Hebrew of Tanakh versus the Hebrew of the Chachamim. So the same way over here, this could be that in the times of the Torah, this actual fruit was called Priyetz Hadar. I think there are a couple of Mefoshim on the pasuk that explain it that way. But other than that, it's an example where we see that you can't use exclusively Torah Shabbat Sav. You need Torah Shabbat Peh in order to clarify Torah Shabbat Sav. The same way as a lot of other things. The same way as this past week's parasha, we had Vezavachta Kasher Tzvisicha. Why doesn't it say the rules of Shchita in Torah Shabbat Sav? Because those are left. Torah Shabbat Peh. You got to learn Torah Shabbat Peh to understand. Okay. Anyway, going on. Okay, so that was a side thing. That was a side thing just to explain parts of the Braisa. Now, let's get back to Rabbi Yehuda. What we were saying so far is that Rabbi Yehuda does not require the other minim to be hodder. He requires the esrog to be hodder, we said, but not necessarily the other minim, because even though the chachamim hold is a hekesh between them, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and doesn't learn that hekesh. So that gets back to the question, therefore, whether a dry lulav or hadassim or aravis is possible or not. Rabbi Yehuda will say that they're kosher because he doesn't care about a hodder for the other minim, and the chachamim will say it's possible. So now, what Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring another proof from a Braisa. A Braisa says, Esrog ha-yoshan posel, an old Esrog is posel, and if it's old, then it's dry. In fact, Rabbi Hananel has a girsa that it's dry. So it's posel for Rabbi Yehuda Machshu. Rabbi Yehuda says it's kosher. So the Gemara says, Tiyuk to the Rava. So there you have a clear contradiction to Rava. Rava said that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Esrog has to be hodder, but the other minim do not. Now we see from this Braisa, that even the esrog, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't care if it's hot or he doesn't care if it's dry. Gemara says, you're right, tiyufta, that's it. There is a stira to him. So that's it. Rabbi Yehuda does not hold that you need a hodder even that you need a hodder even by the esrog. He will say that when it says creates hodder, then it means one of the other things. The Gemara is going to bring on Lamed Hey Amar Aleph a half dozen limudim from different tanoim about what the word hodder means, where it can mean other things other than beautiful. So Rabbi Yehuda will hold like one of those, therefore he doesn't necessarily hold the esrog and the other minim have to be beautiful. Okay, so the question is, v'lo boi hoder. So you're telling me when it comes to the esrog, Rabbi Yehuda does not require it to be hoder. V'hanantinan, we learn later on in our perek, when we get to the Mishnah, we have a Mishnah now about the lulav, the next one's gonna be about the hadas, the next one about the arava, then some general dinim about the dalad minim, and then about the esrog. And in the Mishnah about the esrog, it says, "Et hayorek kauti," an esrog that is green like a kauti. And the word kauti itself means a leek, so it means so a leek is a deep green color. So therefore, we mean an esrog that is green like that. Tosfos actually, let's finish the Gemara over here, and then we'll say, "So hayorek kauti, an esrog that's green like a leek." Rav Meir machshir v'Rabbi Yehuda poisel. Rav Meir says it's kosher. Rabbi Yehuda says it's posel. Lav mishum deboi hoder. Now, why would Rabbi Yehuda hold that it's posel? Presumably, it's because he requires the esrog to be hoder. And the answer is like not necessarily mishum de like gomer peira. The reason is because the fruit is not yet ripe. You don't have the taste of it. You don't have the you know, you don't have the quality of the fruit yet. So therefore, like in that sense, it's not an esrog yet. Now, first of all, Tosfos talks about a couple of things. First of all, Tosfos gets into a long discussion over here about what exactly does the color yorek by itself mean. Here we're saying yorek kauti, so clearly it means the color of a leaf, which is green. But what about in other places in Shas, when it says that when it says the word yorek, what does that mean? Tosfos talks about three possibilities. It might be that yorek usually is green, and then in that case, why are we comparing it specifically over here to kauti? Or it might mean that yorek actually means blue, and we find, for example, that tcheles is similar in color to kauti, which implies therefore that the kauti therefore is bluish, and therefore that yorek would also mean blue. And there's certain other gemaras that also seem to imply that. On the other hand, yorek might mean yellow. So the fact is, it seems from different Gemaras that Tosfos goes and then discusses the pros and cons of it. But the fact is, it seems that the word yorek in Lashon Kodesh meant a number of different shades of colors that nowadays we would call them different colors. And in modern Hebrew also, they have different colors for them. Within yellow itself, Tosfos talks about it. It could be yellow like gold. It could be yellow like beeswax. Lamaisa, of course, an esrog is supposed to be the color of gold or the color of beeswax. So therefore, yorek itself, so yorek by itself can't mean yellow over here. It has to mean green, or like Tosfos says, maybe even possibly blue. But in other places in Shas, sometimes the word yorek may indeed mean yellow. Anyway, Tosfos also adds that we're not really talking about the when we say over here loy gomar pera. Now we do have later on in the perek, we're going to have an argument if the esrog is unripe. So Tosfos says that's actually not really the same machlokes as here. Here we're talking about where the esrog is. Here as far as the green esrog, we're talking about it's unripe. Sorry, Tosfos is referring to the next case over here. So Gemara says Toshma. Let's bring. So we don't have a proof that Rabbi Yehuda says that the esrog has to be hodder. What we see is that he does hold it has to be an esrog, of course. And if the fruit is so unripe that it's still green, Rabbi Yehuda is going to hold not really an esrog at all. Next, Toshma. The same Mishnah continues. Sheer esrog are cotton. The minimum size of a small esrog, what's the smallest esrog you're allowed to use? Rabbi Meir Omer Ke'egas, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ke'beitza. Rabbi Meir says the size of a walnut, and Rabbi Yehuda says the size of an egg. So now, why would Rabbi Yehuda require it to be the size of an egg? Lav mishum deboyi hodder. Wouldn't it be again because Pashas he requires the esrog to be hodder, and if it's too small, then it's not hodder? And the answer is like, not necessarily. Again, the reason is mishum de gomer pera, because the fruit hasn't completely finished growing yet, otherwise, it would be a normal size. In the previous one, we're saying it's not grown yet because it's still green. Here we're talking about as far as the size, which brings Tosfos to say, here we're not talking about whether the esrog is ripe or not. There is a machlokas later on in the perek about a very unripe esrog, whether it's kosher or not. Here we're and just now we had Rabbi Yehuda saying if the esrog is green, but here we're talking about where the esrog is physically small. Sometimes you have an esrog that physically never grows to be larger than a certain size. But Rabbi Yehuda is still going to say. So Rabbi Yehuda is still going to say that it's still no good. And the same way Tosfos says, actually, you have some fruits that never ripen on the tree. So the same way you can have this esrog that's never going to grow larger on the tree. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't like it. He holds that's not considered gemar peira. Now, what happens is, you know, mice and b'chol yom that we go and buy green esrogim and then we ripen them at home, that's fine. Once they start ripening, once they start having some yellow on them, then you know that they're ripe. You know, the fact that they're able to, you put them together with an apple, as people often do, and they start, and then that apple gives off gases and that causes it to turn yellow, fine. That shows that there was gemar peira, that shows that it was ripe. It just hadn't been on the tree long enough. Therefore, it is kosher. Officially, minhag Chabad is to take an esrog that's completely yellow, that doesn't have any green on it, but lamaisa, not always able to find one. Next, the Gemara says, Toshma, let's bring another proof about what Rabbi Yehuda holds. The same Mishnah continues, over Godel, what's the largest size esrog you're allowed to use? Kadesh Yechas Shnayim B'yodeh Achas Divir Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says the largest that you can use is where you can still fit two of them, two of that size in one hand. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yossi says, no, even if the esrog is so big that you have to hold it with both hands together, it's still kosher. So now, my time, why would Rabbi Yehuda say that an esrog is possible why would Rabbi Yehuda say that an esrog is only kosher if it's smaller than with the size that you can fit two in one hand? Wouldn't it be because he requires the esrog to be hodder and the pashtus said a too big esrog is not hodder? And the answer is no, that's not necessarily Rabbi Yehuda's reason. The reason is kibin to Omar Rava, because Rava tells us later in the parak, lulav yamin the esrog b'smol, the lulav you're supposed to hold in your right hand, the esrog you're supposed to hold in your left hand. And the reason is, we're going to say later, because the lulav has more minim in it, and it's three, as opposed to the esrog is only one. So therefore you show the lulav and the hadassim and the aravas more chashivus by putting them in the right hand. What might happen is, zimin in the michlifile, it might happen that you get mixed up. You accidentally pick up the esrog in your right hand and lulav in your left. But now you're going to try to flip them around. But also, if silly, what happens if you're going to, you're not necessarily going to put them down. You may not have a table there or anything to put them down. So you might, if the esrog is too large, you're not going to be able to juggle them from one hand to the other. You're going to wind up dropping the esrog and then it'll get absurd. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't want you using an esrog larger than a certain size. This way, even if you mix them up, you'll be able to flip them around. But not that he actually holds that it would be possible with larger than that. Basically, he would say it's Xavier because of that. Okay, so the question is, the Ela, the Rabbi Yehuda, Haksim, Hader, new, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the fact is it does say Hader. So if we're saying now, the Maskana, that Rabbi Yehuda does not hold that the esrog has to be Hader, then what is he doing with that Haksim? And the answer is, Ahu, Hader Be'elon, Mishana Lashana. He says that word hoder, we read it as if it said hadur, the one that dwells, and therefore it teaches us that the esrog, again, we're going to have various limudim on daf lamed hey, where we see that the word hoder refers specifically to the esrog, and one of them is hadur b'ilonim, shana l'shana, it's a fruit that remains on the tree from one year to the next, meaning most fruits, if you don't pick them while they're ripe, then eventually they ripen and they fall off the tree. The esrog is unique in that the fruit stays on the tree and continues growing until you pick it. So hadur, that it dwells on the tree from year to year, Rabbi Yehuda will hold one of the drashas that we say over there. Tosfos says over here it's Ben Azai. The Rashash says actually the Girsa is supposed to be the Marshal says the Girsa is supposed to be Rabbi Bahu. Anyway, the point is he holds that's what hadur means. So Rabbi Yehuda can hold that way. Also, he doesn't hold that it means that the thing has to be hadur. Next, the Mishnah had said, Shal Asherah Shal Irani Dachas. The Mishnah had said that Lulavim, that apostle, include ones from an Asherah tree or from an Irani Dachas. So the question is, Shal Asherah apostle? You're telling me a Lulav from an Asherah is apostle? But Amar Rav, a Lulav Shal Avedizor Lo Yitovim, not our kosher. Didn't Rav say you shouldn't take a Lulav that was used for Avodah Zarah, which can mean a couple of possibilities. It can mean, Rashi says, that, for example, they used it as a broom to sweep the ground in front of the Avodah Zarah. It can also mean, for example, that the Avodah Zarah was worshipped using this lulav. Let's say, for example, you have some type of Avodah Zarah that the way of worshipping it is to throw a lulav at it, or pass a lulav in front of it. So such a thing, lo yito, you shouldn't use it l'chatchila for the mitzvah, v'im not al kosher. But if you did take such a lulav, then b'di'evit it's kosher because of the even though it's also hanah. Fine, mitzvahs lav lahonis nitnu. The mitzvahs are not a matter of hanah. The mitzvahs are Hashem told us to do them, and we have to do them. Like a slave serves his master, Rashi says. So therefore, you're not really having hanah from it. Therefore, it's kosher b'di'evit. So why over here are we saying that a lulav from an asherah would be possible? The answer is the Gemara says. What we're talking about over here in our Mishnah is the Asherah of Moshe. So what does that mean? Rashi explains the Asherahs that existed in Eretz Yisrael in Moshe's times when he's warning the Jewish people in this past week's parashah, in Parashas Re'eh, Abed to Abram as Kol Makomis, and then get rid of their Asherahs. And that means you have to burn the Asherahs. Asherah and Tisrach would rage. So therefore, anything that has to be burnt, to katuti michtas shiurin. We consider that as if it's already burnt, as if the shear of it has already been cut down, as though it's already been burnt to ashes, and therefore you don't have a shear, as we're going to say soon on Lamed Beis, Lamed Beis, a lulav and the other minim have a minimum shear, they have a minimum length, so therefore here you don't have that. So So the Gemara says dekanami. In fact, you can see that from the wording of the Mishnah. Dekatani dumya de'iru anidachas, because the Mishnah mentions together in the same breath shel asheira v'shel iru anidachas. Now, an iru anidachas we know needs to be burnt. Therefore, obviously, we must be talking about the kind of asheira that has to be burnt. Meaning, in other words, as opposed to, if let's say, for example, they use the lulav to sweep the floor in front of the Avodah Zarah, it wouldn't even necessarily be, it would be also bahana, as something that was used to serve Avodah Zarah, but they could be mevatel afterwards. The goy could decide that he doesn't want to worship this Avodah Zarah, or he doesn't want to use this lulav for worshiping Avodah Zarah anymore, and he's mevatel it, and then it becomes mutar bahana. The same way, if let's say they threw the lulav in front of the Avodah Zarah, same idea. Tosfos actually discusses at some length over here that a couple of different other possibilities of what Asheira de Moshe is. One is, besides, we actually said it means the ones that existed in Eretz Yisrael when they come in, and the Torah is telling us, even though usually you're able to be mevatel Avodah Zarah, here you don't, you have to destroy them. But Tosfos brings up a few other possibilities. We could be talking about an Avodah Zarah that belonged to a Jew, and the halacha is that of a disorder of a Jew, you can never be mevatel, as opposed to the braisa that's saying that b'dieved you could, would be talking about an avodah disorder of a goy. That's one who was mevatel. That's one possibility. A second possibility, Tosfos says, is that there's a difference between before or after you mevatel it. So if you mevatel it, then b'dieved you're good. So cutting off the lulav from the tree amounts to bittul. But you wouldn't be yotze before you mevatel it. So then, at all. So then, in that case, so you could have a case where the lulav was cut off the tree and then somebody used it for avodah zarah. Then it would be possible, as opposed to if the tree itself was being worshipped and then they went and cut the lulav off the tree, then that would constitute bittul. Therefore, would be kosher. And a third possibility, Tosfos says, you could even distinguish whether the tree was planted to begin with for avodah zarah, or whether it was planted for some other purpose and then he worshipped Avodah Zarah for it, then the tree doesn't necessarily become Asabana. Okay. Next, the Mishnah had said, Niktam Roshay. Another case where the lulav is possible is if the top of it is cut off. So Omer Rav Huna, Lo Shonu Elam Niktam. That only applies that it's possible if it was actually cut off on top. Avol Nisdak, but if the top of it was cracked, kosher, then it's kosher. Now, with these two things, niktam and nistak, there are a number of different opinions among the Rishonim what exactly these terms mean. In the case of niktam, among others, does it mean the top leaf was cut off, and the top middle leaf over there, you have the top of the little of the one double leaf that you have on the top over there. So are we talking about that was cut off? And if so, do we mean the whole thing or maybe only part of it? Or do we mean that part of the shedra itself was actually cut off? Or do we mean that niktam roshay might mean that the tops of most of the leaves along the length of the lulav were cut off? There's those and a bunch of other opinions among Rishonim as well. Anyway, Rabbi Huna is telling us that if nistak, if it was cracked, then it's kosher. So again, cracked could mean, again, we actually explained that it means we're talking about the tips of the leaves. So we're not talking about necessarily the middle double leaf. We're talking about all the other leaves on the lulav. If they were cracked partway, then they would still be kosher. There's also, again, you have other Rishonim that explain that cracked means that the shedra itself is cracked. So then it would be kosher. So the Gemara says, "V'nistak kosher." You're telling me it's kosher if it's cracked. Well, Tanya, we're learning a bright. So a bunch of things that make a lulav possible that we're not mentioned in our Mishnah. Lulav kofuf, a lulav that's bent, and we'll discuss soon in the Gemara what kind of bending we're talking about, or kavutz, or a lulav that is kavutz. Now we have the gears that we have in front of us is kavutz with a kof. Therefore, it's related to the word koitz, which means a thorn. So it means a lulav that thorns are sticking out of it. On the other hand, Tosfos brings from the Aruch that the girsa would be with a chaf, with a cuff, and therefore kavutz with a cuff would mean shriveled, that the lulav is shriveled up. In fact, both of those are accepted, the halacha, and both of those possible lulav. Soduk, or if the lulav is cracked, like we just said, okum, or if bent, doyma lamagol, those are actually one thing, it actually says okum doyma lamagol, if it's bent resembling a sickle, So in other words, it's very, very bent over, so it's like very, very curved. Posel, all of those are posel. Chorus posel, also if the lulav is chorus, which means that it's hard, that if it's hardened, then it's posel. What happens is, as we talked about in the Mishnah, the way it works is the branch that's the lulav starts by growing in the middle of the tree with its leaves tightly bound together to the shedra, like we buy them. Then eventually, as the branch starts maturing, then the bases of the leaves and the shedra start hardening, and eventually the leaves start pointing away from the shedra. Eventually it reaches the point where they're bending away and they can't even, the bases of them are so hard that you can't even physically bend them back towards the shedra. At that point, that lulav is called chorus, and therefore it's posel. On the other hand, doimel chorus kosher. On the other hand, if it only resembles that, meaning they're not quite there yet. The leaves are starting to get hard, but they haven't gotten so hard. You could still bend them and have them go along the length of the shedra. Then kosher. Then it's kosher. Anyway, we see from the braisa that sodruk is posel. How is Rav Huna telling us that sodruk is kosher? The answer is amar papa to avid kehemik. The answer is the braisa when it says it's posel. If it's sodruk, if it's cracked, means that it resembles a fork. You have in Rabbeinu Hanano, you have a diagram over there showing, illustrating a fork. In other words, when the two sides of the crack are really far apart and it looks like, so actually Rashi explains it's not even cracked. Rashi explains like this. You could have that the lulav itself may grow with a deformity where it has two shedras, where instead of having one shedra running the length of it like normal, it has two shedras, each one with leaves sticking out of it. So therefore, it actually resembles a fork, but it naturally grows that way. Then that's when we'd be saying it's fossil, whereas Rav Huna would be telling us that if it didn't, it grew naturally with one shedra, and then the top of it was split, then it would be kosher. Different Rishonim talk about different possibilities. What's going on over here? We could be talking about where the leaves themselves are split, and we're saying it is kosher if it's only split a little bit, but if you could have where it's split, where even though it's only split a little bit, the two sides of the split are very far apart, and therefore it looks like, as we're saying, it looks like a fork. So then we'd be saying, even though physically the split is not very large, but because the two sides of it are in different directions, then therefore it'd be possible, as opposed to what we're going to talk about soon, where you have a split and it's not like that, where they're still basically together. Okay. Next. We said that if the lulav is curved, resembling a sickle, so Amar Rava Lo Yamarin Ela Lefanam. So Rava says that's only talking about if it's curved forward, meaning forward would be the direction opposite the shedra. So you hold the lulav when you take the dalim minim. You hold the lulav with the shedra facing you. The other side, the back side of the lulav, is the side, it looks like it has a groove running down the middle of it. That's the shedra. If you ever take all the leaves off the lulav, you'll notice that the shedra is kind of triangular in cross section. You have the front of it is wider. That's the part we think of when we think of the shedra, and then it narrows toward the back. And in the back, you have, and then in the back, it comes to a point. So that side is called, we think of it as the back. The Gemara is thinking of it as the front of the lulav. So if the lulav is bent in that direction, it's bent downward in that direction, that's when we're saying it's posel. Aval achra, but if it's bent backwards, meaning in the direction of the shedra, so that when the person is holding the lulav, the lulav curves forward towards him, then kosher, then it would be fine. Because then bir yosehu, then that's the normal way of a lulav to grow. Lulavim often are shaped like that, where they're bent a little bit towards the front. Although it does say in Shulchan Aruch, that's only if it's bent a little bit. We're not talking about if it's bent a huge amount, then yeah. Amar Rav Nachman, tzadim kilafonav dami. Rav Nachman says that if it's bent to one side, then that's considered like toward the front. Therefore, that would be possible. But Amar Lo Kilachar dami, a different version is that he said it's like toward the back. Therefore, it would be kosher. Since we're not sure, then we don't take such a lulav. Lamaisa, it says that the best thing is that the lulav shouldn't be bent at all. And the lulavim that we buy typically are not bent at all. They're only bent a tiny bit. But if they are bent, then you have the dinim that you say over here. This that we're talking about, by the way, is when it comes to the shedra of the lulav being bent. Sometimes you go to the dalim minim store, and they have the lulavim that have knetlach, that have where the upper leaves, the top part of the upper leaves on the top of the lulav is bent over. those are actually kosher. And in fact, some people prefer them because then they're less likely to split apart. On the other hand, minei chabad is that we don't take them. Even that, in Shulchan Aruch, it says, if they're bent a little bit at the top, then that's fine. But if like most of the leaf is bent in half, then it would be possible. But our minhag is not to take such a beloved anyway. We take ones that have the top leaves straight. Okay. The Amar Rava, and Rava says, here's another din about the kashrus of a lulav. Hai lulav the solik b'chad hutza, a lulav that has one hutza. And what does that mean? You have, again, a few different explanations. Rashi says it means that it has leaves on only one side of the shedra, meaning on the other side is completely bare. Another explanation is that we're talking about that the leaves of the lulav are supposed to be usually double leaves. So here we're talking about where all the leaves grow singly. They don't grow as double leaves that are attached together along one side as they normally are. That's how the Rambam explains it, for example. And then you have an explanation from the Gaonim that we're talking about a lulav where instead of having like this, you have leaves going, you have leaves coming from the bottom, and then shortly after that, another pair of leaves and another pair of leaves and so forth going all the way up to the top. Suppose you have a lulav where you only have one leaf running all the way from the bottom to the top on each side. That would be another meaning of the solik b'chad hutza. Anyway, any of those, bal mum hu possible, all those lulavim, that's such a lulav, is considered a bal mum, therefore it's possible for the mitzvah. And the halacha is like all of those explanations, so any of those would pass over lulav. If it has leaves only on one side, if the leaves are single instead of double, or most of the leaves, that is, or if they have only one leaf on each side going from the bottom to the top. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, nifritzu olav chula. We said if the leaves are nifrat, between broken or broken or severed or cut off. But we said in the Mishnah, on the other hand, nifridu olav, if the leaves are separated, then it would be kosher. So what does that mean? Amar Papa, nifritzu ka'ovet da'ovet ki chufya. The word nifritzu means that they resemble a broom. So Rashi says, what you do, you tear the lulav, you tear the lulav leaves off the shedra. You bind a bunch of them together, and then you have a broom. So therefore, so the Mishnah is telling us that kind is possible. Nifridu di ifrudi. On the other hand, the word nifridu would mean where they're only separated, where, like we said, the bottoms of the leaves are beginning to harden and they're starting to point away from the shedra, but they're not completely away yet. You still have that they're still basically growing in the same direction as the shedra, and you could, in principle, bind them back together with it. That's Rashi's explanation. Tosfos discusses at the beginning of the perek that in both cases we're talking about where the leaves are attached. Nifritzu would mean where most of the leaves are torn in half, where again the leaves of the lulav are supposed to be double leaves. Now part of the process of turning a lulav into a broom, Tosfos explains, would be you take the leaves and divide each one in half. Take two double leaflets and divide them one from the other, like you do when you're making lulav rings, for example. So therefore, the Mishnah would be implying that if most of the lulav is like that the leaves are split apart and they're still attached to the shedra, then it would be possible, as opposed to nifridu would mean where they're starting to grow apart. Then you have a third explanation from the Rambam that nifritzu means they don't even have to be completely cut off the shedra, but they're hanging downward. They're ripped off. Enough of their attachment to the shedra is ripped that now they're hanging downward rather than facing upward toward the tip of the lulav as they normally should. And again, nifridu, according to all of them, would mean the way they're starting to spread apart, but they haven't completely. Boyra Papa, Nechlakat Tioimes Mahu. Rapapa has a question. What if the Tioimes has gotten split? Rashi explains that Tioimes is the top double leaf of the lulav. So you have again above the shedra, you have leaves continuing to grow up from the top of it. So what happens? Rashi says, what happens if that tioimus, those double leaves, are so Rashi explains, we're not talking about this. So actually what it is Rashi explains, we're not talking about the double leaf. According to Rashi, what we mean is like this. At the top of the lulav, you have several leaves growing together. And again, usually they're tightly bound together. What happens if two of those leaves are split apart and the shedra is split apart with them below them as well? So what would be the din? So Toshma, the Amr of Yechon, Amr of Shimon Levi, Nitla Tioimus Possel. We say that if the Tioimus was taken away, was cut off, then it's Possel. Now we say cut off, my lab, wouldn't it be the case who I didn't Nechlepa? Wouldn't we assume the same thing is true if it was split? And the answer is why not necessarily nitlo shiny. You could say, well, it's completely removed, da'chosele, because after all, now the lulav is missing something. So now like you don't even have a complete or lakachtem lachem. Or lakachtem, it has to be lakichot tama. It has to be a complete taking. And when that top leaf is missing, then you don't have a complete, then you don't have a complete lulav. But not necessarily. If it was cracked, would there be a problem? According to Rashi, anyway, we're talking about that the two leaves on top are split apart and the split goes all the way down to the shedra. So Rashi apparently would have to understand it's not like we had before with the Ovid Kehemnik, where it looks like a fork, where the two ends really are very far apart, and visibly when you see the lulav, you see a split over there. We're talking about more the kind of thing where there's a split over there, it's still holding together, it's still tight, it's still fairly tightly together, but if you look carefully, you'll see a split. Tosfos brings that what it means is, again, we're still talking about the double leaves along the whole length of the lulav, that if most of those were split apart, then it's possible. To be exact, it depends whether it's nifritsu or whether nifridu, how many of them are broken apart like that. And then there's another explanation that different Rishonim have, that the tsuyimus over here does mean the top middle leaf, where the top middle leaf, which is a double leaf, like all the other ones, and therefore if that's split, then we're saying Papa is asking whether it's possible, and the maskana is going to be that indeed it is. So then you have different opinions. Does it mean if most of it is split or only a little bit? Therefore, it says in Shulchan Aruch, you should take a lulav where the top leaf is not split at all, which is what we do when we go buy our lulavim and we look carefully, or we ask the dealer to look carefully for us to see whether the middle leaf is split at all. Because you shouldn't use one that's split even a little bit. But if it's split a little bit, then you don't have anything better, then you can use one that's split a little bit. Okay. Ikadamri, another version in the Gemara. Amr of Yechanan, Amr of Shum and Levi. That Nechlaka Tiyomis, if the Tiyomis is split, Nasik Nishin Nitla Tiyomis, that's the equivalent of the Tiyomis being removed or possible, and therefore the Lulav is possible. So therefore, yes, we see that it is possible if Nechlaka Tiyomis, according to the various definitions that we just had. Okay. Next, we said in the Mishnah of Yehuda Omer that we said in the Mishnah that in the case where the leaves are starting to grow apart, nifridu olav, Rabbi Yehuda said, yagdenu milmaila, we should bind it together on top. So Tanya, we learn in a braisa, Rabbi Yehuda oimer mishum Rav Taifin, the pasuk says, kapos tmarim. The pasuk says, branches of a palm tree, but the word kapos can also be understood like kofos, as in tine. Therefore, it means, if the leaves are growing apart, then you have to tie them back together. That's why he says you have to tie them. The halacha is not like him, though. So Amale Ravina Ravashi, Mimai Dahai Kapis Tmorim to the Lavu, Bechlau, Ravina asked Ravashi, how Bechlau do we know that Kapis Tmorim refers to a Lulav? Sure, Tmorim means a date palm, so obviously there has to be something from the date palm, but how do we know from the Psukim that it means a date, that it means a branch, that it means the closed branch, the Lulav? A Macharusa, maybe we do need one of the open branches. The answer is, but in a kofos veleka. Can't, because you have to tie, yeah, it has to be kofos, it has to be that the leaves are bound together with the shedra, and they're not by a chorusa, they're growing at 45 degree angles. So the question is, ve'ema ufsa. Maybe just the opposite. Maybe the pasuk is telling you that you should take a piece of a trunk of a palm tree, which after all is definitely kofos, it's one solid piece. The answer is kofos m'klal de'ikaparim. The answer is the word kofos, the word kapos, which we're darshaning as kofos, implies that it's something that could conceivably be separated, but you didn't. Instead, you're taking it while it's still attached together, as opposed to the trunk is always going to remain attached together. So therefore, it obviously can't mean that. What about the high kofos volume loilum, as opposed to the trunk is always going to stay together? Okay, the ema kufra. How do you know? Still, maybe what you should do is, maybe the Torah is telling you to take a kufra, which is, this is a branch that's not quite a chorusa yet. It's only a year or two old. The leaves of it are starting to grow apart. Maybe the Torah, like this, we're saying, b'dieved, you can use it once the leaves start growing apart. And Rabbi Yehuda says you have to bind them together. But maybe like a chila, the Torah is telling you, don't take one where the leaves are tightly bound together. Take one where the leaves are starting to spread apart. And then bind them in such a way that they go together with the top of the lulav. The answer is, Amar Abai, Duracher, Dachenayim, Mechol Nusir, Vaseh, Asholim, Nusir. The Pasuk says that the Torah's ways are ways of peace, and all of its paths are pleasantness, of noyam, of pleasantness, all the paths of the Torah are peace. Now, a kufra, the problem is that there are thorns, and there are thorns and sharp things that come out of it, that if you try to pick it up with you, that if you try to pick it up, that it's going to scratch your hands. So it can't be that the Torah is telling you to take such a thing, that would be darche noyam. Therefore, necessarily, it must be a lulav where the leaves are still tightly bound to the shedra, and therefore there's nothing sharp on there to lacerate your hand when you try to pick it up. In fact, on Amud Beis, we're going to have something similar. We're going to discuss how we know the identity of the hadas. Rava over there brings a different pasuk in that connection. Here, the Gemara doesn't bring that. Tosfos says because Rava wasn't here when they had this discussion in the Mishmash. Okay. Rava Tosfah, who was one of the last Amoraim, asks Ravina, here's another question. The Ema Tauti Kapi de Tapi. How do we know that you're supposed to take only one lulav? After all, kapois tmarim is in the plural. So maybe you're supposed to take two lulavim. So he answers him, kapasksin. Yes, but the word is written in the pasuk without the vav, so we can douche it, so we can understand that we can read it as if it's a kapas, which means one branch. Okay, so then the question is, ve'ema choda, fine, so maybe it means that you should take only one leaf of a lulav. How do we know you have to take the entire lulav? The answer is, lahu kaf korile. That wouldn't be called kaf, that we need something that's called kaf ois. So therefore, necessarily, we have to be talking about the branch that has many leaves on it, and we're saying that it has to be kaf, that it has to be kaf ois, so it has to be kafos. So we doubt, in other words, three things from the word. It's kapos, meaning branches. It's also kafos, that the leaves have to be bound together. L'chatchila, you should be taking one where the leaves are all bound together. And kapas, in the singular, meaning only one, not two. Okay. We said in the mission that sine har habarzel k'sheira. We said that the lulavim from har habarzel, which is a very hard, stony mountain, and therefore the lulavim that grow over there are very stunted, and the leaves of them, the leaves of them are not long like the leaves of a normal lulav. So nevertheless, we said they're kosher. Amar Abaya, lo shanu ela shiroshe shalzeh magil tzad ikre shalzeh. That would only be kosher, though, if at least the leaves are long enough that the tip of one leaf reaches the base of the next leaf. Abel ein roshe shalzeh magil tzad ikre shalzeh. But if it doesn't even reach the base of the next one, posel, then it would be posel. And the Gemara says, Tanya Nami Hofi. In fact, we learn something similar in a Braisa. A Braisa says, Tzine Har Barzal Psula, that the palm trees of Har Barzal Apostle, the lulavim of Har Barzal Apostle. So what do you mean the Apostle? V'anan Tznan Ksheira. Or a Mishnah said that it's kosher. Ela Shema Minar Kabaya. Obviously, the answer must be like what Abaya said, that there's a difference between whether the tip of each leaf reaches the base of the next one. So the Mishnah is talking about where it does, therefore it's kosher. And the Braisa is talking about where it doesn't, therefore it's possible. The Ikka de Rami Le Mirma, there's others who didn't learn it. Like this we had, we started with a biased statement, then we showed how the Braisa and the Mishnah together fit with a biased statement. There were others who learned it the other way around, that they started with the Mishnah and then the Braisa. They realized there's a contradiction, and then Abaya gave an answer to resolve the contradiction. So the Ikka de Rami Le Mirma, there are some Chachamim who learned it as starting as a question. Tnan Sine Harabazal Kosher, we're saying that the hard palm trees of Harabazal Kosher, Valtanya Psula, but we learn in a Braisa that's possible. And the answer came, Amar Abaya, Loi Kasha, Kan Sherosh Shazeh, Magil Tzad Ikri Shazeh, Kan. It depends whether the tip of the leaf reaches the base of the next one. The Mishnah is talking about where it does, therefore it's kosher. The Braisa is talking about where it doesn't, therefore it's possible. Okay. It's talking about these Tzine Harabazel, Amr of Mary and Amr of Yishuvan Levi, V'amila Rabba Bamori Mishum Rabbechem and Zakai, Shnei Tmoros Steitmaris Yeshbe Gay Ben Hinnom. There are two palm trees in Gay Ben Hinnom, which is a valley near Yerushalayim. But Ola Oshim Beminehem, smoke comes out of the ground between those two palm trees. Those are the kind of trees that we're describing over here in the Mishnah that you can use the loving of them for the mitzvah of lulav. This is the entrance of Gehenna. The Gemara actually in Erevin talks about there's a few different entrances of Gehenna in different places in the world, one of them being this one right outside Yerushalayim. Marashah explains a bit of symbolism of it, the chlal, that it means like there's different areas in the world, different things that a person might fall into that lead them to Gehenna, and one of them is associated with Yerushalayim, with the idea being that Yerushalayim is the place where Torah comes from. You can have a person who doesn't focus, you can have a person who learns Torah with Kanter for the wrong reasons, and he's involved in his own Tyrus representing the palm trees over here, and two palm trees representing Machloikas, and we're saying that there's an entrance to Gehenna in that. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Lulav Sheyesh B'Shloish Tfachim Kola. So we said that a lulav that is three tefachim tall, kedei l'nan ne'abo, the Mishnah had said enough to shake it, is kosher. So Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, shir hadas v'arava shloisha v'lulav arba. What it actually is the minimum length of the hadas and the arava is three tefachim, the minimum length of the lulav is four tefachim. Kedei sheyeh lulav yotz v'na hadas tefach, because you want the lulav to be able to stick out one more tefach than the hadas. Rav Parnach says in the name of Rav Yechanan differently. Shedra shalul of tzarach sheyetz min hadas tefach. The shedra has to stick out one tefach beyond the hadas min arabas. When you look at a lulav, you have the shedra ends at a certain point. Then you have the leaves continuing to be above that, all the way to the top of the lulav, sticking up. So according to Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, it's fine that you only have one tefach of the lulav, including the leaves. The tefach can include the leaves sticking up above the hadas min arabas. Whereas according to Rav Parnach, you need that a tefach of the actual shedra should stick up. So the Gemara says tnan. So either way, the point is both of them are saying the lulav has to be four tefachim. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? On Mishnah tnan lulav sheyesh b'shloish tefachim kedei l'naneir b'kosher. The Mishnah had said that if the lulav is three tefachim long enough to shake it, then it's kosher. So three, not four. The answer is ema u kedei l'naneir b'kosher. What the Mishnah means is three tefachim to go together with hadasim and arabas, plus an extra tefach to shake it, because the part that's bound together with the hadasim and arabas is not going to be the part that shakes, only the unbound part. Which, by the way, you know, we have on Hashanah, the minig is that we usually have throughout Sukkot, we have five bindings on the lulav, three to hold the hadasim and arabas together with the lulav, and two on the lulav itself. But our minhag is that in Hashanah Rabbah, before Hallel, we remove the top two rings. And the Rebbe once explained, the idea is, because then it makes it that the top of the lulav will shake much more when you shake the lulav, it'll shake back and forth much more because it's not bound by the ring. And therefore, that's an expression of simcha. So therefore, but here also, the idea is we want that the top of the lulav should be free in order to shake, and therefore you need to have a tefach a bit sticking above the hadas and arava. So according to Shmuel, it's enough that you have a tefach total of the lulav sticking up, and according to the Parnach, it has to be specifically a tefach of the shedra. So therefore, Ma'u Kedei Islay. So each one holds the way he holds, whether we mean the lulav as a whole or whether we mean specifically the shepherd. Okay, Toshma, let's look at Braisa. Shir Hadas V'Arava Shloish, the lulav Arba. The Braisa says the minimum length of the Hadas and the Arava is three tefachim. The lulav, the minimum is four. Ma'u Bahabi Olin. L'chora, four tefachim means including the leaves. So then it would be a question out of Parnach in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, who said that the shedra itself has to be four tefachim. And the answer is loy, levad me'olim, not necessarily the braisa might mean besides for the leaves. The shedra itself has to be four tefachim. That's how it is. That's how it's brought. In Shulchan Aruch, the shedra itself has to be at least four tefachim. Or actually, you have a machlokes rishonim. Is the Gemara saying in the end, what if you have, let's say, for example, what if you had dasan and arabas, let's say, are themselves a four tefachim tall? Is it good enough to have the shedra, or is it good enough for the lulav to also be four? Or is it always the lulav has to be one tefach, the shedra of the lulav has to be at least one tefach longer than the hadas min arabas? That's how it is. Okay. Now, The Gemara says, Gufa, let's get back to the Braisa and analyze it. Shiur Hadaspar Rav Shlosh of a Lulavabba. The minimum length of a Hadas and a Rav is 3 Tfachim. The minimum length of the Lulav is 4. Rav Tarfin Omer, but Amma Bas Chamisha Tfachim. Rav Tarfin says, an Amma of 5 Tfachim. So what does that mean? On the face of it, it sounds like Rav Tarfin is saying that you need the Hadasim and Aravas to be 5 Tfachim long. So Omar Rav, so Rav reacts to that very sharply. Surely, Mori let Reb Tarfon. May Reb Tarfon's master, may Hashem forgive him. How could he say such a thing? Hashta Ovos Shlosh Alayim Ashkathinan. It's hard enough to find Hadassim that are Ovos. We have 3 leaves on each level, like the as we're going to talk about in connection with the next Mishnah and the Gemara. It's hard enough to find that 3 Tvachim. V'loim Ashkathinan, we can't find it. Bas Chamishim and Boya, you're going to expect us to find a Hadass 5 Tvachim long? It's very difficult to do. So how could Reb Tarfon say that you need an Amma of 5 Tvachim, which would be, I mean, let's put it in perspective, you know, 3 Tvachim is about 9 inches according to Rav Avram Chaim Noah, about 12 inches according to the Chazon Ish. Reb Tarfon is telling you you have to have 5 Tvachim, 15, about 15 or 20 inches respectively. Rob is saying it's very difficult to find Hadassim that meet the criteria that we're going to talk about later, that they have to have 3 leaves on each level. So how can Rav Tarfon say that? So he also Rav Dimi Omer, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he clarified what Rav Tarfon means. Amma bas shisha tfachim. What it is like this: a normal amma we talk about consists of 6 tfachim. Instead, asay oisa bas chamisha. We divide a regular amma into 5 tfachim. So therefore, and then each of those we're considering for this purpose of tefach. Same am shloisha lahadas. So you have 3 such oversized tvachim are used for the hadas, v'ashar, and the remaining one, the lulav, is for the lulav. So what that would mean, in other words, it would mean that the hadasim have to be, that the hadasim have to be, as the Gemara is going to say, 3.6 tvachim. Because what you're doing is you're taking the amma itself, which is 6 tvachim, you're dividing it instead into 5, so each of those tfachim that we're talking about for this purpose is 1.2 regular tfachim, and 3 of those would be 3.6. So that's the amount that you need. Rashi in particular explains that what it means is that the hadassim and arobas themselves have to be that length, and also the one tefach of the lulav that sticks up above them, like we said before, also has to be that kind of oversized tefach. So Gemara says the problem with that is kasha dishmul. So therefore, kama havalu. So how much does that come out to be? Comes out tlosa. It comes out 3 3/5, 3.6 tefachim. Fine, that's not so hard to find them all with 3 leaves on each level. Therefore, even Rava will be fine with that. The problem with that is kasha dishmul ad shmul. The problem is you have a contradiction between 2 statements of Shmuel himself. Here he's saying that the shiur of them is 3 tefachim. On the other hand, Rav Huna says also in the name of Shmuel that the halacha is like Rav Tarfon. So Shmuel is saying 3 tefachim. Now all of a sudden we're saying why halacha is like Rav Tarfon, which would be 3.6 tefachim. So the Gemara says, okay, boy, don't. You could say maybe Shmuel is not being precise. He's rounding. The problem is, as we've had before, Eimer Damin and Loid Dok L'Chumra. You can say that he's not being precise when that will result in a Chumra. So he might, for example, say 4 Tvachim instead of 3.6. And that way, for sure, you have 3.6. L'Kula Mi'aminen, L'Kula Mi'aminen Loid Dok. How can he say that he's not precise, L'Kula? He's going to say 3 Tvachim. People are going to think we mean 3 regular Tvachim of 3 inches, according to Rabbi Chaim Noah, let's say. So they're going to take a Hadas, which is 9 Tvachim long. And meanwhile, Shmuel is saying, the halacha is like a tyrant, meaning that it has to be a little longer than that. So now, he also, Ravin, when Ravin came from Eretz Yisrael, he explained the other way around. What Rabbi Tarfon means is the other way around. Amma bas chamisha tfachim, it means you take an amma of 5 tfachim, a shorter than normal amma, which there is such a thing. We talked about earlier in the Masechta, an opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, that such an amma was used to measure the kalim of the Mishkan. So you take that, asay osa shisha, and instead we divide that smaller amma into 6 tfachim. So now each of those tfachim is smaller than a regular tefach. Same hand shloisha vahanas vashar lulav.
So now three of those go for the hadas, and one more tefach of that size goes for the lulav. So in other words, so now let's figure. You're talking about a five tefach amma, which is, let's go with Rav Avraham Chaim. A tefach according to him is about 3 inches. So a five tefach amma would be 15 inches. You're dividing that in six. So each of those tefachim is 5/6 the size of a normal tefach. It would be 2.5 inches instead of the normal 3 inches for a tefach. So now what we're saying is, Rav Tarfon is telling us that you could, so now Rav Tarfon is telling us that you can use, that you can use these smaller than normal tefachim. So therefore, in other words, the hadas and the arava only have to be 2.5 tefachim tall rather than 3. And then the lulav has to be 1 tefach taller than that. Kama havalahu treu kalga. So that comes out to 2.5. Soif kasha d'shmol ad'shmol. You still have a contradiction with what Shmuel said, because before we said that Shmuel said it has to be 3 tefachim. And now the answer is lo dok. Now the answer is that Shmuel is not being precise. And now we can say that works because of l'chumra lo dok. Now we can say that Shmuel is not being precise l'chumra, where he's saying 3 tefachim, but really he's saying the halacha is like a tarifin, that 2.5 tefachim would be enough. The amr of Hunam Shmuel halacha k'rab tarifin, namely that he says the halacha is like a tarifin. Is that in fact the halacha? There you have a machlokas who's shown him whether the halacha is like Shmuel, who says that the halacha is like Rav Tarfon, or not. Is the halacha like Rabbi Yochanan implicitly, or like the Chachamim, who said that you need regular size tefachim? We follow the Chachamim, and b'diavad we say if a person only has a hadas or an arava that's 2.5, then b'diavad he can be yotze with it, like Shmuel says. Let's learn the Mishnah and a couple of lines of the Gemara. The Mishnah says, Hadas ha-gozol v'ha-yavish posel, a hadas that's stolen or dry is posel, same as with the lulav, shalasheda v'shalanidachas posel, niktam roshoy, if the top of it was cut off, nifritzu olav, if the leaves of it are torn off, oshahoyu anovav merubis me'olav, or if it had more berries than leaves, the hadas grows berries on it, posel, then all of those is posel. The miyat and kosher, if you take off the berries, then it's kosher, so that you have more leaves than berries, then it's kosher. The aim of mat and the yomtev, but you're not allowed to do that on yomtev, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara later on Daf Lamed Gimel, why not? Now, most of this is a repetition of what it said by the lulav. The reason why it repeats it is because each of the dalav minim has something unique about it that you need to talk about. In the case of the hadas, you have the berries, for example. So once it's mentioning those, then already it mentions. So once it mentions those, then it mentions all the other ones as well. There's a different explanation that the vote would be mela lulav is not so easy to get. So you could say a little stolen lulav is possible. Hadasim on the face of it are much easier to find. They grow wild. So maybe a stolen hadas shouldn't be possible. The guy can easily replace it. Nevertheless, we're still saying it's possible. And then along with it, we mention all the other soul. Okay, so what is a hadas? The Gemara says tonen abonon. The posuk calls it anaf eitz avos, a branch of a thick tree. That means, so that it makes it sound like the tree has to be all branch, meaning in other words, the tree is completely covered with leaves, because the leaves are like they're continuous up the whole branch. So shanof of choifenus eight. So it means that the leaves of it have to cover the wood of it. The ezahu heavy zahadas. That's a hadas. And you see, when you look at a hadas, that the leaves can almost completely cover the stem. So the Gemara asks, "Ve'ema zesa?" Maybe it means an olive leaf, which also has very long leaves that one of them covers up till the next one. The answer is, "But in an ovos veleka." Yeah, but on the other hand, you have to have the pasuk is saying two things: anaf eitz, that you have to have the whole branch with the whole tree resembles a branch, in other words, that's covered with leaves. But you also have to have ovos, that it's like braided together, an olive leaves, you don't have that. They're continuous in length, but not necessarily in width around the branch. So it doesn't look like a braid that completely covers it. The Gemara says, the aim of dulva, maybe say that it's supposed to be a branch of a dulva, which Rashi explains as a chestnut. Tosfos says no, because that doesn't fit the description of the Gemara over here. Steinsaltz translates it as a plane tree. Anyway, maybe it means that. The answer is there you have the other way around, but in and enough of Chayfinas Eitzib Elekta. There it's the other way around. The leaves are The leaves look like they're braided together because they're thickly together, but not so thickly that they cover for that the leaves on one level go all the way up to the leaves on the other level. So therefore, you don't have that. You're missing the anaf eitz. The Gemara says the emer hiyuduf. Maybe say that the anaf eitz of this refers to a branch of a hiyuduf plant. So the answer is Amar Abaya Dracher Dachinayim Baleka. So Abaya uses the same answer as he did on Amar Aleph Dracher Dachinayim. Here you don't have that because a hiyuduf has thorns all over. It has sharp leaves, not thorns, but the ends of the leaves of it are sharp, and they're gonna lacerate your hands when you try to pick it up. So obviously the Torah didn't mean that. Rava Amar Emesva Shalom Ahavu. Rava brings a different pasuk that says truth and truth and you should love truth and you should love shalom. This tree has no, this plant, the hiyuduf, has no truth and no shalom because it's a poisonous plant. So therefore, obviously, the Torah can't be telling you to use a poisonous plant for the dalad min. Okay, and we're going to continue on that point tomorrow and discuss the criteria of a hadas and discuss the point of what anaf eitz obis means and how the leaves should be configured.
Shkayach.
Shkayach.